But do that salsa bump any longer? Oh, Diddy. What's up? Welcome to Mostly Film, your one-stop chaotic shop for all things in the world of cinema. I am one of your hosts, Jonathan McCarter, doing my beautiful co-host, and JP Paton.
You know, I really would have thought you would have come in with a We Are Family.
No, almost you know? Did. Almost did. But my other, the other woman almost did was, not Karma Chameleon, Two Princes. I'm losing the...
I don't remember the melody.
It's, anyway, the Birdcage is gay films.
Yeah.
It's... I was going to try to come with a gay anthem, but I couldn't really think of one. So come on, baby, do the salsa. Felt pretty Diddy to me. So
I felt very true to Hank Azaria's character.
It did. It did.
Which I honestly really enjoyed.
No, yeah, I did too. I liked this movie. So, yeah. Well, The Birdcage. So I didn't tell you what it was. So it's the Thursday episode. We're doing our breaking off our first in review in a while, like an actual like, actor director. We've been done one of those in a while because we did Spooky Season, we did Christmas, and we did Oscars, and we just did that Trash Action Cinema, which is Statham versus Butler. Now we're actually getting back into our in review series, like a director, now an actor, a proper in review.
Yeah,
if you say, because I mean, technically Butler and Statham was an in
review. But this is our first actors in review.
Yes, first actor solo actor.
In review.
And we're doing Robin Williams, which I've always wanted to do. Robin Williams. I mentioned at the end of our Tuesday episode that I started a couple years ago to watch through his films because I've always loved Robin Williams movies.
Yeah.
I mean, Hook was like a defining film for me, like for live action films.
Yeah.
And it was Robin Williams. So, you know, I've always just had a soft spot for Williams. And then I've watched a handful of his films and now I just can't wait to revisit some of them again and see the ones I've seen today. Or for this week, I've never seen either of these films. So it was a first time for me. And there's a lot looking forward that I haven't seen or haven't seen in a long time. So I'm really excited for Robin Williams in review.
Kind of like the B-side Robin Williams.
Yeah. Because everybody's seen Dead Poets, Good Will Hunting.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
Hook.
Flubber.
Actually, a lot of people haven't seen Hook that I've been talking to.
That's surprising.
It is. Really surprising.
I miss Spielberg.
I know. So, no. The same thing with Flubber.
It was Spielberg.
I don't know why. A lot of people haven't seen Flubber either.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the other Poets, Hunting, and Doubtfire, probably the biggest three. And Good Morning Vietnam. A lot of people have seen that one.
Yes. And Patch.
Patch Adams. Yeah. Not Nutty Professor, but there's another one he was in that was like that.
I don't remember.
Don't either. We'll find out. So this week we did The Birdcage and Moscow on the Hudson.
Yep. All Dawson recommendations.
Yeah. From the last episode, two episodes ago now, go back and listen. Check it out. Dawson's good dude. Questionable taste in movies, but
yeah,
good dude. Actually, arguably, he's the best taste in movies, but we just agree to disagree. All subjective. All right. So let's talk about, before we break down The Birdcage and Moscow on the Hudson, off the top of the dome, Robin Williams is an actor. Thinking about his films, he's a kind of a. We you and I were talking off pod about how Robin Williams. I think maybe we talked about it on the pod at the end of the last one. How he gets so kind of pigeonholed into funny guy Robin Williams.
Yeah,
and, you know, not for his acting chops, like in Dead Poets and Good Will Hunting and The Fisher King, and then even some moments of in The Birdcage and Moscow on the Hudson, you know, he's just, I think he's a very underappreciated lead actor.
Sure.
So looking at his filmography, what are your kind of overall impressions of his body of work before we break down and watch his movies and how many films? Well, first of all, how many films has Letterboxd said you've seen percentage of his? And then how familiar are you with?
This cannot be true, but it says I've watched 4%. I know for a fact that
I've seen
a lot more of these.
He's a star of 166 films on Letterboxd.
Yeah, which, it's crazy.
Like for reference, we're not watching Aladdin.
Yeah, I've seen
that's an animated film. We're not watching Night at the Museum. Like those kind of films. I'm telling you now.
Yeah.
You can nix me on that, but I figured we're not going to watch Ensemble if he's not the lead.
Yeah.
Or if it's an animated film, I don't plan on doing that.
My experience with Robin Williams is synonymous with my childhood. Like, I'm taken back to the first time I watched Aladdin and Genie's on the screen, and that big, bolsterous voice just kind of like, it's pure you know, endorphins. Like it just, it makes you happy. And all the other roles, like, you know, we'll talk about in a minute. Like it just, I don't know. It is, he was the most hyper character. Like, I don't know. Most like, character is not the right word, but I mean, that's, mm-hmm. those were just the type of movies that I probably watched him in. And it wasn't until I got older that I experienced the more, fleshed out versions of himself in film. And those are the movies that probably stick with me the most. He's somebody that I think is almost mythical in the roles that he plays.
Yep.
Not that he plays godlike characters, but his role in those movies take on, you know, or represent just like, I don't know, larger than life type of people. And I don't know. Very, very few people you could just plug and play into a Robin Williams role.
Yep.
Like he truly defines it. So what about you?
Yeah, I agree. I associate Robin Williams up until 10 years ago with just childhood Aladdin,
yeah,
Flubber, Hook, even beyond that, Jumanji. I mean,
Night in the Museum.
Yeah, Night in the Museum, Jumanji.
His voice acting stuff with robots and Happy Feet. Yeah, I mean, it's great.
There's a bunch of other, I'm trying to find them, like Man of the Year, License to Wed. I used to think that movie was so funny when I was in high school, like middle school. RV. Like, I just associated with only really a funny guy until, you know, I saw Good Will Hunting. I saw Dead Poets Society. But even then, like, he's got some, like, great deep cut films. Like, one I watched earlier this year, Death to Smoochie, was amazing.
Yeah.
The two we watched this week, I really enjoyed. What Dreams May Come, Insomnia, Christopher Nolan film. There was another one. Awakenings with Robert De Niro. I mean, just all these. And then The Fisher King, which we watched for Terry Gilliam interview. Just such a, he's got a film called Jack, not trying to make a joke. Just a jack of all trades, man. Like,
yeah,
genuinely shocked he didn't have more success in leading different kind of roles. And
I don't know. I think he was pretty synonymous with the 90s.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it was hard to, I don't know. I think he was very much, he had very wide success.
Yeah.
I mean, Dead Poets Society and Good Will Hunting are some of like American cinema's like most well-known, talked about movies. And he plays, I mean, granted, very similar roles, but pivotal roles. And yeah, I think his, yeah, it's great.
So tell me, what are your three favorite Robin Williams film off the cuff?
Yeah, going into this review, I would say right now, when I think of Robin Williams, the movie I think about the most are,
give me three.
Probably Dead Poets Society.
Now, are you giving me the ones you just think of or your three favorites? I'm going to give you my three favorite Robin Williams films.
I'll probably give you my three favorite Robin Williams movies.
Okay.
Probably Dead Poets Society. This is where it's hard. Mm-hmm. Because I want to go Mrs. Doubtfire. I think Miss Doubtfire is a given because of that funny role. But the other one, though, I want to say Fisher King, but Jumanji's like, that was probably one of my most rewatched movies as a kid is Jumanji. But I don't know if it's because of Robin Williams. So I think I got to go with Fisher King.
Yeah. So I'm kind of with you. Mine would be number one.
Yeah.
Hook. Favorite Robin Williams film. Followed by closely now The Fisher King. Now The Fisher King is a much better film, better performance. However, Hook just has such nostalgia and I've never not enjoyed that film and I watch it annually, so can't take it away. So Hook, The Fisher King, and honestly, I'm probably going to say Good Will Hunting because every year I watch Dead Poets Society. Robin Williams isn't the star of that film.
No.
He's great in it and he's the revolving factor in that film, but he's not the star.
he's a less utilized version of himself in Dead Poets Society.
Mm-hmm. I'm very excited to watch Death to Smoochie again, because that could...
Oh, so we're doing that one again?
You've never seen it.
I hadn't seen it.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you haven't seen it, we'll watch it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm excited to watch it again, because that could creep up in there for me as a third, I think. Because I really enjoyed it the first go around. So we'll see. And I'm excited to hear your thoughts on what dreams may come as well. Okay. So, but yeah, that's kind of my just Robin Williams brief ideas. So,
all right,
let's jump into The Birdcage. This was a new one for me, new one for you. 1996 film, directed by Mike Nichols. The Letterboxd synopsis is: Come as You Are, a gay cabaret owner and his drag queen companion agree to put up a false straight front so that their son can introduce them to his fiance's conservative, moralistic parents.
You know, I think this is the one time where I think your accent did not meet the standards of the actual movie.
Wasn't gay enough?
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's good. I can't. That was as gay as I got. I can't go any more Diddy than that.
No Diddy. So yeah, this is
maybe if I put a sucker in my mouth.
I'm just moving right along from that.
You got caramel apple ones in here.
Yeah, so you've got
I got
very
this.
Interesting plot for a movie. Mm-hmm. This movie came out in 1996, like you said.
I will say, progressive for its time, doesn't hold up well as character. It comes across as this movie was not intended, you can tell, to mock the gay community. This was I did research actually on it.
Yeah.
Was controversial.
Yeah.
Christians did not happy with it.
Oh, absolutely.
And honestly, it didn't do all that great.
Yeah.
And even parts of secular world panned this film a little bit. It definitely doesn't hold up now, because it feels like it's a caricature of the gay community. And, you know, it's feels like it's kind of mocking them.
Yeah.
Poking light at it. Which at its core, yes, it is doing that a little bit, but at the same time, I don't think that was their intention in the long run.
Yeah, I think it's an attempt at a representation at a time where, like you said, like people are not generally as accepting or understanding to accept, or I don't know. It's just, yeah, this movie done in 2024 could look totally different.
Oh gosh, I couldn't watch it in 2024.
I think it would be something.
Shia LaBeouf and Megapolis. You've seen the pictures now.
I saw the pictures. It would be something. But honestly, I enjoyed the movie.
Only a half star more than me.
Yeah. I think it doesn't execute the way that you would expect. And the ending kind of redeemed itself a little bit. I don't know. I felt like we were going to get through this whole movie, and you know, we don't have to, I guess we don't have to go into like a full movie synopsis of this, but it is your basic hijinks of gay couple act straight, but
gay couple where Robin Williams is like the manly macho kind.
Yeah.
I mean, he's there a flirty feminine, but he's the mustache, hairy chest guy, and then Nathan Lane's character is the cross-dressing drag queen.
Yeah, quote unquote housewife.
The Mrs. Doubtfire of this film.
Yes. But you said you didn't like Nathan Lane in this role.
It was too much.
Because it felt like Mrs. Doubtfire. I enjoyed Nathan Lane because it felt very much like his character in Peppers from Modern Family.
I never seen Modern Family.
Oh my God. Okay. Anyways, it just felt I didn't mind it. I don't know. The son, honestly, is the son the villain?
The fiance and the son, I guess, are equal fault there.
Equal fault. Yeah.
So Robin Williams' son gets engaged to a very conservative, like a Ron DeSantis kind of senator guy.
Yeah.
And he's already under a lot of scrutiny because his like main partner he's running with, like getting to like presidential kind of stuff, gets
found
arrested.
Dead.
Yeah. Found. Was he found dead?
He dies in the bed.
Oh, with a black prostitute.
Yes. Who lives in some kind of housing or whatever that he funds.
Yeah.
So it's like his
controversy
own
to the max.
Live-in
on top
prostitute.
Of this, he's now going to go, he's make this big deal. Like, oh, I'm about to have like this big change, or y'all are going to be so happy to really turn the tide, because, you know, his daughter's getting married. That's what they're going to pin.
And they think his the fiance's family,
Robin
is,
Williams,
yes, yeah, is a straight couple,
like very well traveled, yes, influential, conservative. So, you know, Robin Williams and all of these gay cabaret folk have to put on a big front. And it should have been a lot funnier than it was.
I agree. Yeah, it wasn't as funny as I expected.
No, the only time they really tried to make humor out of anything was once they actually get there and they're at that little random seating thing with the crucifix and really? Then at the dinner table.
See, I gotcha. That was like your typical, stereotypical like hijinks in a movie kind of like this. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoyed after Nathan Lane has the freak out about the real mother. So they end up, basically trying to get Val, who's the son, real mother, to come to the dinner. When Nathan Lane's character finds out, he freaks out, runs off, and basically, actually, I think this scene takes place before that, but more context to the story. But whenever Robin Williams is trying to teach him to be straight.
Oh, at the dinner, the lunch thing with, yeah.
Yes.
But then they had this big thing with that old lady sitting there watching that never did anything. And like, I don't know. Yeah, him walking like John Wayne was kind of humorous.
Pretty great.
And yeah, him, the toasting, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there were moments, and I think that based on this, there could have been a lot more funnier moments from other films that were released in this kind of day and age. And like, Gene Hackman, I thought, was underutilized for who he is. In this film, I thought he brought some decent comedic relief, and they could have expounded upon it more, like with him loving Nathan Lane's character as the wife, and
they could have gone a step further with
I think so.
Yeah,
and they didn't. It's like this film, for as trying to be as progressive as it was scared to take any other steps. I don't know.
Yeah, I think back then that was probably as big of a step as you could expect. I mean, there comes a point where a studio that's putting this movie out, like, just kind of steps in and is like, no, this is too much.
Yeah.
I don't know. I personally enjoyed some of the, I mentioned to you like early on, there's like political Easter eggs, and then it gets very obvious.
Yeah, like, when you told me Easter egg, I was like, no, it's not very subtle.
Well, because in the beginning, so like,
I know how far you are, to be fair.
Robin Williams' character, I forget his actual name. Oh, yeah. Armand Goldman.
Which is funny. Armand's just a gay name because apparently it's a Diddy name. Yes. What is it? Season one of The White Lotus? Armand. The manager's Armand. White Lotus. Also Diddy.
Yes. We're just saying Diddy now for
homo.
Okay.
Okay. Right? No homo. Okay. So Diddy. No Diddy. So Diddy's Diddy's the new word.
Armand Goldman. Yeah. Whenever he shows up in the club the first night, he's like, Kennedys are here. Yeah. You know, obviously.
Which one?
Yeah. Which one?
Rounds for them.
And then when we're first introduced to Gene Hackman's character, we get a very obvious clue that he's ultra conservative because he has a picture of him and Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Which we have a great callback in our next movie, mm-hmm. Ronald Reagan.
We do.
Reagan's America, man. It's something else. So, and then as the movie progresses, these political themes take a bigger part in the whole show, but I enjoyed it. I think ultimately that Robin Williams, as far as like a Robin Williams led movie, I don't know if I completely buy it for this one. This feels like a combo of Robin Williams, Nathan Lane, especially towards the end. Nathan Lane kind of becomes the crux of the story, and it kind of rides on his ability to sell it. It like I said earlier, like, it's a very subdued performance from Robin Williams.
It is, actually, which is funny because the moment you're introduced to him, he's like this larger than life character, like the way he looks, the way he acts, the way he dresses. And then he's just the star in a non-starring role. He's a B character, kind of, which is a testament to someone's being able to act as well. But
yeah,
I think it would have been better used if you had more Robin Williams, using Robin Williams to his strengths.
I disagree, though. I think that's what works for this movie, is his subduedness, because I think something that they don't go into great detail, but they hint at it, is that Robin Williams, you know, is someone that, like most gay men do, like they have to you know, act as someone that they feel like they're not. And
you have a lot of experience with this, sounds like, JP.
And I think that they just, you know, I think his in roles that we're used to for Robin Williams, he's more expository and more flamboyant, and in roles that he's not a gay man. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like Robin Williams being Robin Williams.
Yeah, you get the most those outbursts of Robin Williams when Nathan Lang tears off into like a pity tangent. So
yeah,
no, the things I really liked about this film are less about the story of the film. The story felt very plotting, generic, like, because we've seen this film 1,000 times before now since. This was, like I said, more progressive back in 96. But
yeah,
I loved the, just, it felt like Barbie took inspiration from this film, like the set design and everything.
You mean it's like the South Beach?
Well, yeah, but it's so obviously set.
I mean, it's. Yeah, but felt very 80s, but this is late 90s when this is happening.
It felt the Truman Show. Actually, that's probably more like it. It felt like they were in like a set of a beach on Truman Show to keep Truman in there.
I gotcha.
Like it felt like it was purposely on a set. Like you could easily tell like the backdrop wasn't really the beach to me.
Gotcha.
But I love the color scheme of this film. The costumes were all fun to watch. And like,
yeah, my biggest takeaway is that Robin Williams' wardrobe in this movie would totally sell in 2024.
Oh, it would. Yeah. You're dead on with that. I see
a bunch of freaking Gen Z kids wearing this. Like, it just, I don't know.
I mean, the mustache is already back. Yeah, I mean,
exactly.
You know what's funny is the mustache used to be a sign of homosexuality.
Yeah.
You rock that mustache all
the time. Thank you.
I used to call you Dollar Store Freddie Mercury on.
Yeah.
Mostly Focused.
You did.
But I decided not to bring that one back.
I appreciate that.
Because you were more like.
Yeah.
Lululemon Freddie Mercury.
Okay. Or so. Sheen.
Sheen.
Sheen? Oh, Sheen.
Sheen. Jimmy Neutron.
Oh, not Sheen.
Deep cuts. Deep cuts. Yep. But no, as a whole, The Birdcage. Fine, progressive for what it was. I was underwhelmed. 3 stars for me. There were a couple good laughs. I thought the performances were all across the board. They were all good.
Yeah.
The film itself just didn't work for me. And Dawson really hyped this film up to me off air. And I just found myself thinking this movie could have been more, could have said more. And this is coming from somebody who didn't want it to do more and say more.
Yeah.
But I felt like I was watching a film that was afraid to be, even in the '90s, afraid to be anything more than it was. And it could have made the movie better. I feel like this movie was constantly holding back every time. Like I bet there's a different edit of this film somewhere, like a Snyder cut of this hidden away.
Were there a little bit more?
Yeah. Edgy. There could have been more jokes. Like the edgiest part of this film to me was the bowls, the dinner bowls.
Yeah.
Where they're playing Leapfrog.
Yeah.
And the moment you do see it, like, it's like, oh, that's funny. And like the whole, it's like they were on the cusp of making something really like funny and just, I don't know. It didn't. This felt more of a serious film to me. And I don't think that was really the intention to me personally. So I don't know. I was let down as a whole, but 3 stars. It was a good movie. I can appreciate the value, the time. I'm sure the risk it was then. I just don't love it now.
Yeah.
Probably a one-off watch for me.
3.5 for me. I don't have to see this one again. But appreciated the performances.
Yeah. I mean, just take the last note here. Like, I just get so hung up on it. That's why I rated it what it is. Your straight son comes home from college with a fiance.
Yeah.
To your gay father and drag queen.
You can't tell me, though, that you thought that was his lover in the beginning.
Oh, yeah. That was going to be somebody else. Yeah, no.
The reveal that it is his son was kind of like this. It sets it up for like, oh, this isn't what I expected.
No, right.
So,
and then I thought for sure that Robin Williams was getting a piece of
Hank Azaria's character.
Mm-hmm. Well, because when Nathan Lane went down to do the show and he comes back up and because he thought she was having an affair, I thought that was for sure who was going to be what it was. But anyway, yeah, you have the whole plot sets up to be like so funny and edgy, and it just never got there for me. So disappointed. But appreciate the film. It's a well-made film, and I love the colors, set, and the performance was all good. Just let down.
Okay.
Ultimately.
All right. So,
let's talk about Moscow and the Hudson. And you kept the cards for this close to your chest.
I did.
You didn't rate it.
Well, I mean, I have now. I just forgot about it.
Oh, I thought you, sometimes when you do that, you have a controversial
no.
take.
No, I just didn't get to it.
You and I are flip-flopped. You gave it 3 stars for this. Mm-hmm. I gave it 3.5. I gave Birdcage 3 stars. You gave it 3.5.
Yeah.
So this is a 1984 film directed by Paul Mazursky. Sounds like a Ruski, if you've ever heard it.
Yeah.
I've heard of some of these films he's done in the past, but don't know really. His directing is way less interesting than his star of Kung Fu Panda 2, Carlito's Way, Ants. Very strange. Mel Brooks' History of the World.
Huh. Cool.
Yeah, so I'm going to read the synopsis. This is way longer than Birdcage. You see this?
Yeah.
Wow. Vladimir Ivanov walks into department store to buy blue jeans, walks out with girlfriend, an immigration lawyer, and buddy. His life and theirs will never be the same again. A Russian circus visits the U.S. A clown wants to defect, but doesn't have the nerve. His saxophone-playing friend, however, comes to the decision to defect in the middle of a Bloomingdale's.
See,
F-shifting Borat yes. again? I feel like I started pretty strong.
Oh, you did. It's like you're teetering on the edge. I'm sorry. I should have interrupted you. You were getting it back.
He is befriended by black security guard and falls in love with Italian immigrant.
We lost it.
Italian immigrant from behind the scenes, a perfume counter.
Might as well. Yep.
We follow his life as he works his way through an American dream and tries to find work as a musician.
Yep.
Anyway. Yeah. So this film, Robin Williams, saxophone player in the USSR, Soviet Union is, I'm not going to say alive and well, but it's alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had to watch out for spies and all that kind of stuff back then. So they're a part of this big circus in Russia. They get to come to America for the first time. And his best friend, Anatoly, which, what have I seen him in?
He's been a lot of stuff. A lot of secondary roles.
I guess that's what it is. I've just seen him in a bunch of stuff. Oh, Spider-Man maybe is what I actually am thinking. I've seen him in the hot dog guy or whatever. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So his friend Anatoly is like the whole film. He's like this idealist that they're going to break out and defect when they get to America because Russia's so bad. I mean, you got to wait hours in line just to get a pair of shoes or to get toilet paper, you know, your basic necessities. You know, it's Soviet communist controlled, so it's a bummer out there. So when they go over there, Anatoly's talked this big game that he's going to defect. And Robin Williams, it's his best friend, but he's like, hey, you got to, you know, tone it down because you're, you know, KGB's listening. You're going to get, you know, basically, you know, not killed, but sent to Siberia, and your family's going to be bad off because of you.
I mean, they kill you to Siberia to kill you, basically.
Yeah, because Siberia is nomad's land and really cold. But they go over to America finally, and Anatoly doesn't have the balls to do it. But as they're out there, Robin Williams does. And he goes up to, was it the security guard? Or was it the girl first?
No, it was the cash register, the cashier,
the girl.
The gay guy. Yeah.
No. Oh, yeah. At the water fountain.
Yeah.
He's like,
but the security guy was there.
Yeah. He's like, I defect, and they're like, we got a defector over here. And is that better?
That was actually very spot on to the actual movie,
which made me so mad. I was like, hey, why are you doing that?
It was one of those moments where he like looked into the camera. It felt very. Very 80s. That was the only time where this movie felt really dated.
It reminded me of this lady has a Turbo Man over here. And Jingle All the Way. Yes. Or I remember.
I've seen that now.
When did you watch it?
Didn't we watch Jingle All the Way?
I did, but I don't remember you watched it. Maybe you did.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad. I don't remember. See, we do so many episodes. Turtle Man?
Turbo Man.
Do you remember Turtle Man?
Yee! Yeah.
Oh, what a great guy. Anyway, he finally gets the, you know, security guard. All of his guys from the Russian circus are trying to chase him down and catch him. And the security guy, the black security guard, intervenes like, hey, this is America. You don't get to take people if he wants to defect. You get to defect. The police get involved. The immigration people, FBI get involved. And he gets to stay in America and everybody else gets to go back to Russia. Stays in America, shacks up well, not shacks up. That's probably the wrong word, but lives with the black dude and his family, very similar to his Russian home.
Yeah.
Cause it's all the family in one house, grandpa, mom, dad, sister, you know, everybody lives there. Struggles to find work at first. All he wants to do is play saxophone, but doesn't really find an opportunity. So he gets a job, you know, at McDonald's, gets a job as a cab driver, gets a job as a bus boy, gets a job as something else.
Limo driver.
Mm-hmm.
And just like a,
he just has a bunch
sells everything. Yeah.
The
classic immigrant, you know, does everything.
Yeah. Just to try to make his way. And in the process, he gets a love interest from one of the girls at the Bloomingdale stores who, he, you know, is trying to hide from the people chasing him, and meets her when he's trying to defect in Bloomingdale's, Lucia. And they end up hitting it off and get a love story. And, an immigration lawyer named Orlando picks him up and they become friends and helps him, you know, try to earn his status. The first half, this is all kind of happened in the first half of the movie, which is my biggest critique. The first half of the movie is too long.
Much too long.
And yeah.
Before they even get to America. Like you're 30 minutes into it.
Yeah. Though this movie's just under 2 hours, we're going to say for argument's sake, 2 hours long.
Yeah.
The first 45 minutes are drag. And I was very like, if this is this movie, I'm going to be like, 2 stars on this.
We spend way too much time fleshing out like Russia and the KGB as a character in this movie for us to have as little of a payoff that we do towards the end.
There's no KGB in the whole film. Not really.
Yeah.
He has a KGB handler.
But you would have thought there would have been that haunting figure of like, oh, the KGB's out to get me.
It's paranoia.
Yeah, but that was way further on.
Oh, you're talking about in the beginning?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, I mean, like, when he gets to America, like, you would have thought once he's in America, you'd have this.
Oh, yeah. Well, he does. Fear. In his head. It's paranoia.
Not often, though.
He does.
No, I watched it today. No, we didn't.
No, I think he did. I think he had it in his head. But anyway.
Sorry.
First 45 minutes, though, I agree, are a drag, and they do make the KGB thing out to be bigger than it is.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought the first half of the film, way too long. For stuff that doesn't have any payoff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, it's just one interesting to me. So I was really negative on this film until after Bloomingdale's. Bloomingdale's scene was fun. There's some actually fun comedic bits. You actually get some real, that's where the movie really starts to progress. However, the whole scene before the defection up to it is too long, even in Bloomingdale's. That scene felt like it lasted an eternity.
Yeah.
I don't think Bloomingdale's are that big. It was like a 20 acre
New York, man.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on up there. But once you finally get out of Bloomingdale's, the story really kicks off. And from there on out, I loved this film. Like, it saved the movie for me. It jumped it from a legit 2 stars where I was ready to rate this film all the way to a 3.5. You know, as he's getting settled into America and he's dating Lucia and, you know, getting to know, I can't remember what the security guard's name is, Lionel.
Yeah,
in Orlando,
and his whole family too.
Mm-hmm.
We'll love more of them.
They've accepted him, and he, you know, he's finally earned enough money to get an apartment. He buys a saxophone, starts playing a little. You know, things are really, you're getting to see this, you know, guy really his coming to America moment. He's getting accepted. Lucia is getting accepted as a citizen. Everything's really going perfect for the guy until it doesn't, and then tragedy hits. Someone died in Russia, his grandfather.
Grandfather. A school friend of his younger sister comes with a letter and basically, you know, finds out that his grandpa had died.
Yeah.
Who had been very outspoken to the KGB when he was there and, you know, was very dear to him. Probably one of the biggest motivators for him to defect.
Yeah.
So
he does, can't go back to that, which is sad. He gets dumped by his fiance on the heels of him about to propose on the boat.
Was he gonna propose? Mm-hmm. I thought he was just wanting to live together.
Oh yeah, his proposal, like, hey, let's live together. That's why I took it as a proposal, kind of. But she just didn't let him get to that point where I thought it was going. But regardless, he's wanting her to move in with him. They've been together.
Yes.
A lot of nipple play in the bathtub. That was a shock.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't get past like the hairy forearms. No,
I know, dude. Robin Williams, one of the hairiest dudes alive.
He is.
Him and Will Ferrell have drastically different chest hair, but equally hairy, just very strange, different hair. But anyway, so he gets dumped, grandfather dies, Has a very embarrassing moment on stage because he hadn't played saxophone in so long. It's one of his saxophone blues kings.
Yep.
You know, he just wants to give up, call it quits, go back to Russia. Not happy. Lionel convinces him to stay. What happened after that? Like, what's the turning point for him? Because I know Lucia comes back.
He basically, he ends up finding his community. Like his Russian community. And
it all started at the diner with the one guy.
It was after that. That because it ends there.
It ends at, where everybody does their
Independence Day.
Oh yeah, everybody has their proud moment.
Yeah, so basically he finds happiness in knowing that he has this small community, but has a breaking point whenever he's mugged. And basically comes to terms with the reality of America. Like it's lost its sheen. He's been there for probably over a year.
Yeah.
He's just kind of learned to, he's just accepted that America is not as great as he thought. And he even states, you know, that whenever you're in Russia, you at least know who the enemy is. But here you have no idea who it is. It could be anybody, which is true. And that's whenever he kind of has that run in with the guy in the diner. And basically it's like him, another immigrant from some Eastern European, you know, place that, you know, he basically is like, I've lived here longer and you're not going to talk bad about it. And that's whenever they basically realize it's Independence Day and you look around the diner that they're in and it's full of immigrants.
Yeah. And they all have their, proud to be an American.
Yeah. They basically have their own like reasons to appreciate their independence. They're talking about, you know,
comes across kind of racist now, but
comes across as racist. How?
I guess they were all their actual ethnicity, but
I found it really surprising how very little, like, you know, quote unquote, like white people you see in this movie, which is the point.
Well, I know, but it's shocking for back then because everything else, like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Well, not whenever you think about the demographic that he's in as an immigrant.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, we see it later on. I think whenever he is a limo driver, like he's driving all these rich white people.
Yep.
But other than that, he's in the streets. He's in the bars or whatever, like the clubs that Lionel takes him to. Like it is the gumbo pot of America, you know, New York City in the '80s.
And
really appreciated it.
So this is one of those films, actually the opposite of The Birdcage. I thought they could have added more humor and I was expecting more humor.
Yeah.
This one wasn't a comedy and I was expecting it to be.
Yeah.
I'm glad it wasn't. Where I think The Birdcage needed more comedic for what the plot was.
Yeah.
This one was more endearing than I anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
But the scenes that did have comedy bits worked for me. Like that whole scene I mentioned beforehand where he's walking by and he looks that dude in the face and they like kind of make this eye contact and he starts following him and he thinks it's a KGB agent. He's like, why are you following me? And he goes, you have a pretty face.
Yeah. He's like, are you CIA or KGB?
UFBI?
Yeah. He goes, no, I'm GAY.
Yeah, him and spelling like, it out. I about spit my Captain Crunch out.
Yeah, it took a moment and he kind of like sounds like, oh, no. Yeah, and pretty funny.
Yeah.
So obviously we talked about it. The beginning of this movie, super long.
Yeah, way too long.
I think if you cut out half of this and like...
The runtime's fine. I think you could have added what you take off from the front.
This movie's long.
No. I'm fine with the runtime because I think you could have taken off the front and moved more to the beginning and added a KGB element. I think there's room in this runtime to have more.
You don't have to add like the KGB actually coming after him, but add the paranoia. Add him.
Yes. Because that would work in the confines of this film with his struggle.
Yeah. Exactly.
Since he's already being followed and he knows he's being followed because they acknowledge it in the club with his FBI agent.
I struggled with towards the end, the reveal of the grandpa dying and how he handles that. I don't think, you know, you get all this time spent with them in the beginning of the movie to where he basically, it shows him writing to them at different points and he pretty much accepts that they might never get these.
Mm-hmm.
but it would have been great for to see some of him struggling with that realization that, oh, I might not, you know, be able to communicate with my family again, so that whenever he does hear from him and he thinks it's going to be good news and it's met with bad, that his kind of downward spiral, like we're a little bit more like braced for it.
It just happened so fast, kind of. But I thought the most impactful moment for me was that night at the nightclub where he played sax and blew it. I thought that was a really good performance by Williams. But no, Moscow and the Hudson just overall worked for me. I mean, the beginning was too long and just meanders. Not that it was too long, it was just not used correctly. I just thought it kind of was all over the place with no payoff, like you said. So when you look at Moscow and the Hudson, you gave it 3. I gave it 3.5. You look at Birdcage and our ratings there. Which film is a better film for you? And why?
I would probably say Moscow and the Hudson, because I feel like the message in the movie, although these two are very similar.
They are.
A lot of it is about community.
Even though Dawson picked these, we are great about accidentally pairing films.
Yeah. I mean, we're the most least produced show ever. Mostly accidents. Yeah. But you know, the two movies are about community, acceptance. I mean, false, like the reality of what you would expect versus kind of what you imagined, mm-hmm. like what that kind of looks like. I think Moscow and the Hudson better executes it or fleshes it out better.
Yeah.
The Birdcage has a little bit of the stuff that I mentioned, but I don't think it capitalizes on it. I think it leans more towards the comedic side mm-hmm. of it, which doesn't, there's no need to go into great detail on a bunch mm-hmm. of stuff. Moscow and the Hudson is more of a drama type movie. I don't know. What about you?
No, Moscow and the Hudson is a better film. The Birdcage is more flamboyant. It's brighter. It's more colorful. It's more appeasing to the eye. It's easier to digest and just watch.
Yeah, it's an easier hang.
Yes, but that doesn't make it a better film.
Yeah.
I think that Moscow and the Hudson is a better film. Not to say the Birdcage isn't. And that's me taking myself. It just wasn't for me anyway.
Yeah.
But I just think this is objectively a better film.
Yeah.
Moscow and the Hudson. I think you get a better performance from Robin Williams in this film by a landslide. I think the acting in this is...
Yeah.
Now, granted, not just by... understandably, he has a lot more to do in this film, Moscow and the Hudson, than he did in The Birdcage.
Yeah.
Like, he is the star of this film.
Yeah, the supporting cast in Moscow and the Hudson is not as good as it is in The Birdcage.
No, no.
Some of that comes with, you know, time and probably, you know, just... Yeah, the time in which it's taking place. Williams, it's 14 years.
Well, and this was written more for this is about Robin Williams, where Birdcage is about Nathan Lane,
and Robin Williams, an ensemble.
Gene Hackman.
Yeah, yes, an ensemble of characters.
So it's not cheating, but like this is more of a feature on Robin Williams.
Yeah.
And it's just, I forget how long he's been around. Like, this is a really good performance for 84. Like, I don't know. I really thought he did a really good job, especially the second half of the film.
Yeah, I think Moscow and the Hudson is a better film, like movie, than Birdcage, but I gave it less than Birdcage, half star. That's mainly because I think Moscow and the Hudson has so much untapped potential.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I would have loved more out of it, or less, like however you want to interpret it or execute mm-hmm. that. Like, you know. It needed something different.
It has untapped potential because of its
beginning. It sits at 3.3 on Letterboxd, and the curve on that is more on the higher side. Mm-hmm. So I think people have a good relation to this movie.
And it holds I think this movie holds up better.
Yeah, it definitely holds up better than Birdcage.
Than The Birdcage.
Yeah, because, I mean, the messaging in it...
sounds like you need to bump this to 3.5, is what it sounds like.
I'll think about
That's what it sounds like.
We'll think about it.
You gotta. I saw you've updated your letterbox to add some mostly film interviews. I saw you did some work. I did some
tags. Yeah. So when we go back, I'll actually be able to look.
I gotta make a. I do the list and then I'm gonna do the tags. That's a good idea. But I'm gonna. I gotta make my Robin Williams one too.
Letterbox lifesaver. Man.
Yeah. But no, I really like both of these movies. They're great additions to my Robin Williams collection. Yeah. And just knowing what we have to come. Mm-hmm. These are going to be distant memories here, sir.
Yeah,
I'm afraid. Like Moscow on the Hudson, I'm going to try to find this hard copy because I really liked this movie. I will never watch The Birdcage again.
Okay.
Just know it wasn't for me. But objectively, it's a 3-star. I'm comfortable in that rating.
Yeah.
And that's my biggest critique of both of them. Both of them, good films. Both have untapped potential in different ways. Some they just have missed opportunities.
Yeah,
I think.
I think we are on the same page on that.
So, but overall, good Robin Williams review.
Awesome
for me. So that brings us to choosing our two movies for next week in review. It's so hard because I don't want to jump right into the heavy hitters like Dead Poets and Good Will Hunting. So,
will we be doing those?
Yeah.
Okay.
How are we going to do Robin Williams in review and not do his two most famous
films? Because we've done Poets recently and...
We've never done Good Will Hunting.
Good Will? Okay. Mm-mm. All right.
Abby's never seen Dead Poets Society, but she said when we go to that, she wants to watch it.
All right.
So we'll do it.
That'll be towards the end.
Yeah, we can do it towards the end. Let's do... Is there a movie that you haven't seen of his that you want to see? I'll let you choose one. I'll choose the other.
Honestly, there's a few.
Popeye, isn't it?
Go by popularity on here. I have not seen Insomnia. I don't want to. That's a very serious Robin Williams movie.
Al Pacino,
love it. Do we want to stay on a serious side?
I mean, we can do. Is that your choice?
I think Insomnia.
You wanna do Insomnia?
Yeah.
Let's, and then for the other, let's do. No, that would be a good pairing with Hook, so I won't do that one.
Now we are going to have to set a limit on these movies, so we probably need to how many of these movies are we going to be doing?
Oh, yeah, because I've already filtered it out. There's not 116 movies.
No, totally. There's shorts and documentaries. Yeah,
no
and all comedian that stuff.
Or no stand up kind of stuff. And if he's not the top one or two billed actors, we're not doing those either, not doing animated, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I want to do, let's do What Dreams May Come.
What Dreams May Come.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll also find that one.
It's a 1998 film directed by Vincent Ward.
Yeah.
Starring Cuba Gooding Jr. and Robin Williams.
Okay.
And old Max von Sydow.
Good grief.
I'm very interested to hear your takes on that one. If you look at the letterbox curve for that, you're going to be like, whoa. I watched this film a couple years ago.
Yeah.
It's something.
Okay. I love something.
So I'm interested to see what my thoughts are going to be on it a second go around. So Insomnia and What Dreams May Come, both serious films, but both wildly different serious films. One's more of an espionage thriller. One's more of a sad escapist kind of film.
Okay. Yeah, so, it's definitely going to be very different Robin Williams.
Yes, than this first week.
Performances.
And then let's just go ahead and pick the next week out.
Okay.
Because I already have the pairing I want to do.
Yeah. What is it?
I want to do Hook.
Yeah.
By Spielberg and The Bicentennial Man by Chris Columbus, because Spielberg and Chris Columbus feel like a good pair of films.
Yeah.
And I've never seen Bicentennial Man, but by all accounts.
I feel like I've seen the images, the stills from it.
Yeah, same, but I've never seen it.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to watch that one. And like I said, I just feel like somehow Chris Columbus and Spielberg go together.
I want to say there was was there controversy around this, for quote unquote Christians,
I have no clue. Probably.
I feel like I've said quote unquote a lot tonight. I was going to apologize.
I don't feel like I've ever heard you say it at all.
So yeah, I mean, Chris Columbus, did Mrs. Doubtfire. So there's that connection.
It's got freaking Sam Neill in it, baby.
Oh yeah.
And our boy, where was he? I just saw him. Steven Root. Coen Brothers.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, so, all right. So you got it. Insomnia, What Dreams May Come this week, next week, Hook and, or in the week after that, Hook and the Bicentennial Man.
Yeah. Cue them up.
So that'll be it. Other than that, that's all we got for you. That's a wrap. So like us, love us, rate us. Check out our other sister podcast, actually our parent podcast, because it came first, Mostly Focused. We're out there.
We're out there.
We'll probably never film this show, but I will eventually, I promise, make like video content talking about films. And
sure.
When I, starting in April, when I'm solo and Benton 90% of the time.
You're going to have a bunch of time.
I'm going to start catching up on some reviews, writing them.
Dude, that's all we need is just some reviews.
Yeah, I just haven't had time. I've been so busy.
That alone, though, that would be half the producing of the show.
Yeah, so I'm going to go all the way back to the last film I didn't review, which is like Angel Heart or Take Shelter.
Well, I mean, like, you know, don't give yourself too much to do.
Just no, I'm not going to write them like I used to.
Yeah.
Like maybe a paragraph.
One or two paragraphs. All you need.
So we'll see.
Exciting.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to watch these next four films.
I do think, because I'll give them credit, Dawson did a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. They don't always have to be blockbuster hits. Like, you know, they can be deep cuts. So I think Dawson should do some curating, some low-end production. My cats are going crazy right now. Yeah, I know. They're either fighting or they're just like freaking out.
Yeah, because
they want to be out of the room.
Who's in there talking?
Yeah.
It's been raining, lightning, windy.
Either that or they just really have to use the bathroom, which could be that cats, too. They'll be fine.
Yeah, cats are good about that.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see y'all next week. So till then there, hang film.
Okay, see ya.
See ya.